This is the European edition of Breaking Banks, the world's number one fintech podcast and radio show. We bring you the EU's unicorns, startups, founders, regulators, and leaders innovating the rapidly evolving fintech scene. A truly localized podcast with both English and local language content, with some of the world's most well-known hosts and influencers in the fintech sector today. Join us every week as we explore what makes the EU a phenomenal proving ground for many of the fastest growing fintech players in the world. Okay, let's roll.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks Europe. I am Matteo Rizzi, your executive producer. Together with me today, I've got two of the amazing hosts. So there is Paolo Sironi and Spiros Margaris with me. Today is going to be talking about InsurTech in different dimensions and aspects. And the way it's going to work is that Paolo is going to interview Matteo Carbone, who is also connected. Ciao, Matteo, from Rome.
Ciao, Matteo. Happy to be here with all of you.
And after that first part of the show, there is Serena Torrielli and Mark Doubt. We're going to tell a little bit more about them later. That are going to join Spiros, myself, and Paolo in a five-heads conversation all around InsurTech. So, Paolo, the floor is yours, metaphorically speaking. And go ahead, tell us all about connected insurance.
So I'm very excited that today we have Matteo Carbone on Breaking Banks Europe. Now, Matteo Carbone is the founder of the IoT Insurance Observatory. He lives between Europe and the US, if I'm not mistaken. I guess he competes with Matteo Rizzi on who makes the best workout in the gym. They say mens sana in corpore sano, which I don't comply with. So Matteo, welcome to Breaking Banks European Show.
Thanks for inviting me to talk about my favorite topic.
So Matteo, you're always inspiring me when I follow you on social media, which really means I've got to follow you because you travel so much. Now, let me understand a bit about yourself and your business, first of all, so we share it with the audience. I have this imagination that one Monday morning, which is a tough time for many people who commute to the office, you were stuck in Milano's traffic. And realized that linking Internet of Things and insurance businesses could generate value for clients. Is that your enlightenment moment to create the IoT Insurance Observatory?
Let's say I've been more prosaic the scenario. I was a consultant advising many insurers on the strategy for optimizing their usage of IoT data. On auto, so what is commonly defined auto telematics, and identified the opportunity to do it in a more effective way and in a way they can enjoy more. So instead to work with a few insurers on single projects, I created a think tank, the IoT Insurance Observatory, that provide a multi-client research to almost 60 players between Europe and North America. So currently, I have joined the observatory, five of the top 15 European property and casualty insurers, six of the top 15 North American property and casualty insurers, four of the top five reinsurers, and the most relevant tech player that have invested in this technology. So the observatory provides all the members a research about what is happening in the usage of IoT. The observatory try to figure out the next steps. I say that I connect the dots. I try to rationalize for them what are the opportunities, how an insurer can extract value from this data. And on top of the way I deliver them this content is through workshops dedicated one-to-one. So each day I'm in a different city to discuss the content of my research, of the research that my team has prepared with the executive of one of the organizations that has joined the observatory. So 60 so members, three workshops a year, are 180 days on their own.
Okay, so basically you're saying the observatory was born in Europe and then extended to the US. So this is Breaking Banks European Edition. And you rightly have a stage as a very recognized representative of the European entrepreneurship and fintech insurtech ecosystem. So that allows you to have the pulse of what is happening in Europe and the US about insurtech and connected insurance, correct?
Definitely. Let's say it's something that has started in Milan, as you mentioned, but in a few months become an European initiative. And after 1 year and a half, I start to knock doors in the US, proposing US insurers to replicate the experience I was doing with European insurers. I started with a few members. Now the two observatories have the same size.
So we want to share with our Breaking Banks Europe audience some points of view about the European ecosystem, first of all. Now, so what makes Europe or maybe Italy, if you started in Italy, so interesting in terms of connected insurance?
Someone has been able to make it work. So the usage of IoT in the insurance sector has been experimented for the last 15 years. There are tons of failures, a few success stories. The Italian market represents the best practices in the usage of telematics data for auto telematics. The French market represents today the best practice on smart home, what they call telesurveillance. The two experiences are unique worldwide. The two markets are showing to the most advanced players, to the most ambitious players in other markets, including US, that this approach is possible. Insurers can succeed in extracting value from data, can sell services to their clients. So we see now US insurers apply that philosophy to their context. Obviously, copy and paste doesn't work, but a smart player can be inspired on what has worked well in another market.
So, Matteo, staying a bit in Europe before we move to the US, because I also want to investigate more the US market and the differences. The audience might think that a black box is something that nobody wants. Typically, you don't want a black box. But a lot of Italians wanted the black box. Can you explain to the audience what the black box is and why it is so relevant in terms of the IoT insurance?
Sure. A black box is a device installed in the car that allow an insurer to know everything about what you are doing. And the fact that someone don't like it is great. This is self-selection. From an insurance point of view, you are able to identify the cluster of clients who accept that is less likely to have bad behaviors. This is a first self-selection benefit that you can take in account as an insurer when you define your offer. Then you can work in order to leverage this data on your main processes. So the way you price the risk at the renewal, the way you manage the claims, the way you try to nudge the client to become less risky. So all elements that allow an insurer to generate a positive impact on the income statement, a theoretical positive income. So let's say that theoretically an insurer with all that levers, what commonly I call value creation levers, is able to generate a potential upside of 30%. Well, an insurer can share half with clients and one third with agents. So a win-win situation that leveraging this technology, the clients who accept it can pay less for auto insurance. And auto insurance is compulsory, is a tax. Everyone is happy to save on taxes. Then to make more profit and to make more happy the agents who have to sell the product. Because if you miss that part, at the end, is only theoretic, the benefit you can achieve.
Okay, so you know that we have a very international audience. It's actually a worldwide audience. Let's assume that you meet an entrepreneur or an investor in Singapore, and he or she wants to build a company or invest in Europe or in the US for connected insurance. What would you recommend them? So how do they have to see the two markets? Which are the main differences or pain points?
I think that there is a first difference if we think about the auto vertical, then we can talk more in general about the IoT in the insurance sector that include home, health and life.
Let's take automotive. It's interesting enough.
Thinking about auto, in Europe today, the best practices use a device installed in the car. So if you are an investor and you would like to propose something to a European insurer, especially in Italy and in UK, that are the two markets more mature, you need to deliver something that is based on hardware that is able to address the claims use cases. If you are approaching the US market today, you need to start with a value proposition that is smartphone based. All the US insurance invested a pretty large amount of time in the past 2 years on the development of approaches that are without hardware or use a small cheap hardware paired with the smartphone. Today you cannot speak with a US insurer without a strong value proposition that is smartphone based.
So that's actually funny. European cars are smaller, but they make space for the device. American cars are bigger, but they prefer to use the phone.
These come from the cumulated experience for more than 10 years. So the hardware-based approach in US has not worked. That doesn't mean that cannot work. Has not worked. So that generates a bias for the US insurers that they don't want to talk about an hardware. Opposite, in Europe, some insurers have a bias that they want the hardware because it has worked well. I think that there is also an opportunity for them to address a part of the portfolio where the hardware is too expensive through a smartphone-based approach.
So what about regulation? So we have many European countries, but especially in the EU zone, a regulation that goes more common playing field. And you have many states in the US with different regulatory perspectives. So is regulation also an enabler, a challenger in this case?
Typically is a good excuse. When someone don't succeed, we have a complex regulation is always a good excuse to justify this unsuccess. Regulation is a complexity that you have to manage. If you would like to address the European opportunity, each market is a completely different story, and not only for the regulation. So the characteristic of the single market, the kind of use cases that you can set up and the benefit you can generate through the different use cases are completely different market by market. So if you are in Italy, and you have an average cost of auto torpar liability for the client of 450 euro is different than a solution for Bulgaria, where the average annual cost is 80 euro. You cannot apply the same approach.
So is the United States of America more homogeneous?
Partially. There are differences state by state, but the kind of product is the same, and the issues, especially on auto, you have in the different states are not so different, but you have different regulators. So you need to discuss the product, the tariff, one by one with 54 commissioners, each of them with their bias, with their goals, with their agenda. That is a complexity. So, but it's more an administrative complexity.
Okay, which is, in your view, the most transparent market in terms of insurtech and insurance? The European market or the North American market?
Good question. Is there, depend what you consider transparent. If you
like flexible prices or information about the success stories, if you can check balance sheets and...
Okay, definitely the structure of the US market is potentially the most transparent one. So each tariff is public, but I think that is not transparent at all for one specific reason. You need to read on each policy 1,000 pages written by an actuary. That is, okay. So it's not, it's something that you have all the information, but you need a genius to understand something inside there.
But that's what the observatory does.
No. I don't talk about pricing. I don't want I have not the competencies to do the job of an actuary. My focus is on the strategy. I'm talking about, I have actuaries that explain me what they found studying all the tariffs, but I'm not talking about pricing. It's not my goal. Okay. I'm talking about approaches. I'm not doing benchmark. My goal is to rationalize for insurers what can be an innovation approach in order to exploit the value of data. Then the execution is up to them. I don't follow the... I will discuss with them the results they achieve, but I don't advise the execution day by day.
Okay, so that's actually very interesting. I do follow you on social media, and I see you don't shy away from constructive criticism to the insurtech community. So what do you think are the main challenges the insurtech entrepreneurs have to face at the same time the insurance companies? What do they make right? What do they make wrong?
Let's say, I think that everyone have different goals and different agendas. So many of the founders are there to make a lot of money selling their company. So it's perfectly fine that they try to make their object to shine, to tell terrific storytellings that shock the investors, the analysts, that excite all the innovation cheerleaders. I work with the incumbent, so I love to understand what of the innovations make sense, can be things that an incumbent can consider to adopt, but I would like to be really concrete, down to the heart. So I try to discount all the stories, all the vanity matrix. I think that there are many innovations that can generate a concrete impact along the insurance value chain, typically are not the innovations that make more noise on the market.
Okay, so suppose you would be asked to found the Lemonade 2.0. What would you change?
The pricing? I think that they are underpricing the risk. Is from my perspective demonstrated about their low growth in the last few quarters since they started to show an improvement in the loss ratio. So they are probably selling at a more fair price, so less underpriced. There is less underpricing the risk, but this way, less clients are purchasing the product. So I think that they can find better ways to address the profitability of the product. So their usage of AI in the future maybe will generate that kind of benefits, but today this is not yet happening. So at the end, they have showed extremely high loss ratios. So I think that for a startup is good to even lose money if you are spending money to acquire customers, so marketing, but not if you are selling something that costs more you, that costs you to produce it, because at the end the loss ratio is the production cost compared with what is the price you are selling it.
Okay, so before we conclude, which is the next thing you see in the insurtech ecosystem, something that excites you in particular, or that you've seen that makes a lot of sense?
As you know, because you are a member of the Innovation Advisory Board of Net Insurance, I'm a fan of all the collaboration between insurers and tech players that speed up their innovation capabilities. So I think that there are a lot of opportunities around claims, around the customer engagement, but also the topic we discussed at the beginning, telematics, IoT insurance on home and health are all experiences that have been exploited by incumbents collaborating with the tech players, collaborating with the players that are dedicated daily to improve that approach. So the insurer sell the product, the insurer manage the risk, but there is a tech players that is dedicated to speed up their execution, to close the gap on areas they are less strong. For example, on the analytics, on the customer engagement.
Good. So, Matteo Carbone, you know that the collaboration between fintech tech companies and insurance companies, incumbents, is a part of the conversation we will have after the break. I really thank you for having joined us on Breaking Banks Europe. I enjoyed, and I believe that our audience from wherever in the world enjoyed that too. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hello, welcome back to Breaking Banks Europe. Thank you, Paolo and Matteo, for an amazing sort of introductory talk. It is actually incredible how the first three person to talk in this show had a terrible Italian accent. It would be a huge fight to understand who has the worst one, isn't it? Anyway, we are in the second part of the show, and I would love, ladies first, of course, to Serena Torrielli give a couple of words about herself, and then I will call Mark for a short intro. And then Spiros, myself, and Paolo will start grilling our guests with questions. Serena, welcome to the show. Welcome to Breaking Banks Europe.
Welcome to you, and thank you very much for inviting me. It's a real pleasure. For me, it's probably the first podcast in my life, so I'm very excited. So, I'm the CEO and co-founder of VirtualBee, a data analytics company. Basically, what we do, to be very, very short, is a big challenge, is to help financial companies, so banks and insurance, to become customer-centric by using data and artificial intelligence.
Thank you, Serena. Actually, you know that I will come back to you to make you doing a show on wealth management, because that's really your like bread and butter. But the reason why you're in this show is because you have one of the few unique cases where InsurTech and FinTech sort of came together. That's why you are in this sort of unusual role today. Mark, my dear friend, welcome to the show. Where are you today?
Matteo, I find myself in London today, Edinburgh this morning, but traveling as usual. Great to connect with you as always.
So, Mark, a couple of words as a veteran, as an InsurTech veteran, please.
Well, nice to meet everyone. My role is co-founder of Chief Strategy Officer at Trove. I've got the opportunity here to be with you all today. The Trove, believe it or not, has been on the go for almost 7.5 years. So we sort of started the company a little bit before the InsurTech hashtag. So we've learned sort of a lot of the hard way, the good way, but we've been there from the beginning.
Great. Actually, I just realized my friend Spiros, despite being one of the hosts of Breaking Bank Europe, actually never got the opportunity to introduce himself in person, because when we did the first show, he unfortunately wasn't able to attend. So, Spiros, take 3 minutes or two as a guest and introduce yourself to the audience, please.
It's a big honor to be here. And my name is Spiros Megaris. For people that know me, I'm an investor and advisor to several startups, also to WeFox, which is a big insurtech company in Europe. And I'm also an influencer. I'm actually very keen to ask some questions today to Mark and Serena, you know, and it's a great opportunity that we have now and in the future as well through this great podcast that came to Europe. I've been to Brad King's podcast before, but actually it's I think it's about time that we have a voice in Europe. So let's begin the questions and focus more on our guests. I would like to ask you, Mark, if I may, Matteo.
By all means.
Mark, do you think, you know, what I always hear when I give speeches, etc., insurance is different from banking? Of course, we know it is, but do you sense that we're still a little behind when it comes to insurtech and the focus the market gives it?
Great question. I think, yes, behind in a sense of, like, for sure, insurtech sort of spun it off or was birthed out of the fintech stuff. And I know Matteo and I probably 10 years ago or longer with Syboss and all the stuff we were doing then is that the heavy focus was on payments and the movement of money in that sense, but very little focus on the insurtech side of things. So definitely we were later to the game than the early, you know, financial services side of things. But it's been interesting, like, looking at how the money flows and where it's going, is that it was the financial services side of things that sort of opened up the opportunity for insurtech. But over the last few years, when looking at the amount of money being poured into insurtech, it's pretty fascinating to see that it was almost like the early fintech side of things sort of broke the dam, and now the flood's coming. So it's been an interesting journey, if that answers your question.
Yes, it does, and it doesn't. I mean, it does, obviously, because, I mean, but, you know, what I sense a little bit is that I think a lot of incumbents in the insurance business feel like they have more time to change, where banks, I mean, they thought that too for a while, but now the tech giants are coming into the game with payments, with lending, etc. Do you feel that the wake-up call for the incumbents has arrived?
Oscar, you're absolutely on the money on this one. I think you're right. I think in the banking sector, they recognized that it was upon them. And I'm feeling or seeing a little bit of change in the, you know, with the insurance incumbents, but I would say not fast enough. I don't know whether it's because you've got a particular age of people in seniority that are riding out their pension, or exactly. or what the rationale is, but, you know, I'm seeing some people waking up. But if I was sitting on the other side of the fence and I had the book of business and the financial capital of which they had, I would certainly be acquiring and investing heavily in the insurtech and, you know, side of things, because there's a lot happening and eventually it's going to overtake. And without saying too much, I mean, we're all seeing that the reinsurers seem to be, I don't know whether it's losing faith or trust in some of their customers on the retail side of things. But they're certainly trying to put more money at risk, which is making a bit of a statement. More money at risk, more like closer to the risk.
I think reinsurers just hedging their bets, you know.
Right.
They have both client base and they see the young kids. And actually it's a good thing, you know. Think of it, Mark. I mean, we've been in the business for a while, both. It's a good thing in some ways they haven't woken up, because if they would realize the change, there would be no chance for insurtechs to grow, you know, because they have the money, they have everything. So I'm actually would be happy if they wake up later than earlier when it's too late.
Well, I think, Spiros, without dominating here, I think what would be really interesting if they at least began to wake up and started, you know, more, you know, investing more heavily in the insurtech world, because the insurtech world is rising. But I think if there was more corporate venture capital or more folks investing in funds from that side of things, I think it would be pretty fascinating about what could happen.
Yes. Last question, and then we'd like to ask something to Serena. Not last, but one that comes to mind is, do you think consumers get confused when they go to challenger banks where they find some classic modern banking products, but on the other hand, they add also insurance products? And then you get this fintech supermarket. But most people would like simple solutions, simple providers, where you know, I go to Trove, I know what I get. What's your view on that?
You know, I think, when folks are going to the, over the last season, the last probably 5 years, when insurtech's really been a hashtag, the main focus is really, for many companies, or the majority of companies, has been on the user experience, on, you know, how they interact and how they engage and how they understand what insurance actually is. But I think the next season, Spiros, is really going to be focused on the guts of insurance. So it's not just the perception on a user experience, but the deeper experience from, you know, claims, you know, data, you know, really into the, you know, really the depths of what insurance really is. So I think there's a whole new awakening for the next wave.
Okay, I
could listen
to you afterwards, but Matteo, please take it
all. No. I was just saying, Spiros, that I could listen to Mark, for hours. You know, I have to say, he's one of the favorite speakers of FinTech Stage. So, you know, thank you, Mark, for bringing your wisdom, you know, to us. Serena, the reason why, as I said at the beginning, you are on the show today is because you're sort of a living proof that FinTech and InsurTech can talk together. And I know, you know, feel free not to disclose, you know, the names or the brands you're working with. But I think that coming from a world where you guys, you know, your company, your startup, both of your startups were particularly lean and sharp in understanding what a wealth management for the masses is all about. You now have found through some of the insurance players a new way to approach the market. And I think I spoiled enough what you are about to say. So, you know, please tell us a little bit about your experience.
Listen, I say it very, very simply. My view is that, from my point of view, from what we do, I believe that the distinction between InsurTech and FinTech is kind of artificial, if not dangerous. Because I believe that the true difference, I'm meaning dangerous for FinTech and for us all, the risk to become as old as banks. Because the way I see it is that the real difference is between offer-driven, product-centric industries like finance and customer-driven, demand-driven industry that are centered around the customer. So the way we do our business in data and analytics is really look at the client and his needs and financial products, insurance products, but from a car insurance to a pension fund are not really, are just an instrument for people to satisfy their needs and desire in life. In order to demand something, you need to know you need it or to desire it. And come on, everybody knows that financial products are not desirable per se. They're not the least sexy item in the world. So I believe if you put the storytelling, thanks to data, into the needs of the customer, of the people, you will end up really reshaping this industry and the value proposition, and you will need no more distinction between products. Products can be bundled in a unique solution that ideally is targeted and personalized to the customer and can follow the customer throughout his life. That's how we see it. So I believe that also really the new paradigm that is possible right now thanks to data and artificial intelligence is really a different storytelling that puts the customer in the center, help people to desire, and puts financial product as something that is just needed to achieve life goals. Just think about the amount, the trillions of money that are in zero or negative rates deposits account in Europe. I really believe that ends up in a problem of financial literacy. People really don't know there's a need to invest and that can have a material impact on their life. So I really have a vision that they see InsurTech and FinTech as a part of a unique industry.
So I listened with great interest this conversation, so the point of view of Mark and the one of Serena. If I can link the two, I would say the following. The reason Mark has experienced that InsurTech has been a little delayed compared to FinTech to start up and to grow is part of the fact that the revenue generation mechanism of the industry is based on the asymmetry of information. Now, the insurance products are the most asymmetrical compared to the investment products, where most of the banks are making money these days, which somehow protects a little bit the value proposition of the incumbents. And that's when Serena is explaining that this is a push-oriented industry, an offer-driven marketplace. So individuals have a hard time of understanding these intermediated value propositions. Now, however, what we are really seeing worldwide is the following. Banks are challenged by fintech and big tech companies because like companies like Amazon or Alibaba can become banks. Banks have a hard time of bringing non-banking products inside their proposition where they should, because it's about contextualized banking. At the same time, insurance companies have a harder time of becoming banks, but a lot of banks are becoming bank assurers. So they're stepping into the insurance market. So I guess that these are the 2-3 years where a lot of banking incumbents will push insurance companies to innovate more. So we should see an acceleration of the InsurTech paradigm. And like Serena is positioning, most likely there will be more combined experiences in front of the client.
Indeed, indeed, Paolo. Actually, it's a great sort of putting the pieces together. And just to stay into the collaboration area, you know, I've been chatting with Mark for probably the past 3 to 4 years and always been amazed on how Trove managed to work and convince and actually elaborate solutions with large incumbents, actually even very large incumbents, into a way that was clearly explained and in a way that the value proposition for the incumbent, was sort of the right trigger to make them move. Mark, can you please give us a couple of examples like this one? And, you know, I have Suncorp, which is sort of the first great example already, a few years ago, even if I read something in the news recently, maybe you want to share. And maybe one other example of sort of successful collaboration, because that's what you guys do, right? That's, Trove per se is an enabler.
Yeah, we've got, Matteo, we have two business units in Trove. We've got our enterprise business unit, which works B2B2C, which is with banks, insurance companies, and retailers. And then we've got a B2B side of the business, which is on the mobility side, which works for, works with companies like Waymo and Peugeot on the mobility side of things. But the early days for us would have been our first major incumbent would have been Suncorp. And we worked on the B2C side of things with them. And then recently we have just launched a product under their with Suncorp on the mobility side, and so on. It's really under very progressive motor insurance, and with them, that's really where, you know, it's probably the maturation of 5 years of tight working together is for them to display a commitment to work with us in the core of their business. We began with single item cover for like smartphones and so on, and now we're working with them to mature products in the auto side of things. It's been an interesting journey working with, say, Suncorp and others, because it's, you've got a large incumbent with, you know, their own processes and you've got a small company that wants to progress and innovate. But we've been able to all be big people and maturely make decisions to push the envelope. I think for an incumbent, it necessitates a company like, you know, like a Trove or like others that can work with them to sort of push the envelope to innovate, because I think internally, most labs or most innovation plays within insurance companies have never really taken exciting products to market. So having someone from the outside be the agitator, innovator that can work in collaboration, I think is key. The other one I'll highlight that we're working with at the moment is Lloyds Banking Group. So we're working with Lloyds Banking Group to also deploy new products on our platform, of which we stand, you know, we're a standalone sort of insurance company in the cloud that enables them to deploy the products they want for their customers. So the banking side of things, I would say, was even more intense from a regulatory perspective than the insurance. But it's taught me patience. I think from a technology perspective, we can probably build the products in a matter of months. But I've learned that the sales cycles and the buy-in from a lot of the big incumbents typically takes a year to 18 months.
Yeah, so actually that's a good link to something that I wanted to ask to Serena, because Serena, you have been actually an enabler, a sort of a supplier and a technology partner of both bank and insurances, okay? So would you agree with the thesis that we were just assuming? So the fact that they are both kind of, cumbersome to work with, but what's your experience in working with both?
Well, for my personal experience, insurance are more the culture of data, and particularly PLC insurance is more used to interact digitally with the end user. For banks, I would say that among many banks, there's a lot of complacency. They're not really scared by the challenges they have in front. I think some of what we're doing is opening also new frontiers, because you were talking incumbents, other tech players, or I mentioned, I read today about Iliad, that is probably ready to launch a bank. I think that these kind of guys that have a lot of users and a better digital culture now with something, for example, that we are doing with something that is called artificial markets or artificial data, basically can get legally and in full compliance with GDPR access to millions and millions of data that are very similar to original data but are not the same, and that are already profiled, that have a lot of information about financial product user. And I think if bankers and insurers don't take the challenge and don't leverage on what we have in their clients, it might be some of these new players to really win the battle. I believe that telecoms are a serious competitor, would be a serious competitor for banks.
So I think we have talked enough about the pain and the scars in collaborating with incumbents. Let's now talk a little bit more like technology and trends. So Serena already highlighted what is clearly a sort of expanding the insurance business into everything that is like wealth management, not to mention the pension and all that. But I would like to ask Mark what he sees being the trends in terms of what is coming next. And I know that, for example, you guys have been working with Google on a super interesting project because, even if we take the auto business, it is evolving dramatically, right? So, and this is one trend that, you don't need to be particularly into InsurTech to understand that, like, to be able to insure a driverless car is not the same thing as insuring, a car that you drive. That seems easy. But what else is coming, Mark?
Matteo, I'd say thanks for teeing me up for this, but I would say that one of the biggest pieces really is mobility as a service. For those of us who get to wander Europe, I mean, you can go to Paris and you can see if you go to the PSA Free to Move app, you can go onto the app and you can have, you can have a kick scooter, a moped, a car. You know, everything basically is available to you. So if you want to navigate a city or just in your general life, everything is there as a subscription. In the same way as we saw the telecom business and we saw, everything move to like Netflix and so on, is that we're seeing all of that happening again in mobility. So the idea of purchasing and owning a car, it really pushes back for only those at the moment who really live in the countryside. So the idea of owning a car in a city or even on, within sort of a 30-minute radius of the city, it seems a little bit silly at the moment. It becomes much more affordable to just have access to whatever you need. It's been 10 years or longer now that we've seen like Uber and then the involvement of Lyft and others, but we're seeing this massive acceleration, the participation from the OEMs beginning to step in with making their vehicles, their cars available. We have a deal with Peugeot and PSA on the Free to Move with it. Yeah, and that side of things, we're just seeing the amount of people who can just have access to a car whenever they want in any area is just phenomenal. So we're seeing that, and then embedded insurance as well. We've seen with Tesla and what they're doing. So why buy a car and then have the hassle of insurance when this could all be bundled as one single package for you? So I think it's much more, we're going to see the evolution of this type of an on-demand service.
Mark, a question I have. What do you think does the insurtech industry has to achieve daily to scale big incumbents? Is there some moment where technology and penetration of insurtech has reached a level where the incumbents are scared?
Yeah, I think that we could look at it from an insurtech perspective in that we're processing data in a more dynamic way than ever before, which I think should scare incumbents because they have been reliant on historical data rather than on new product. So in that sense, it makes more sense for the incumbent to partner, acquire, invest, be part of all of that. But that's one thing on the insurtech. The other side of things is that if the incumbents don't participate and acquire in this next season, I think the major tech companies will, and they'll probably offer more money. And in that sense, what you'll have is the great fear of when Silicon Valley wakes up. What if, you know, when Silicon Valley wakes up and you've got the eBays, the Googles, the Amazons, and so on, all start to acquire or, you know, buy within the insurtech side of things, then they'll have the platforms and they genuinely will relegate insurers to the pipes or beyond that. They'll have their own, they already have their own captives, so they'll just rely on reinsurance money.
I agree 100% with you. Thanks, Mark.
So, curiously enough, I was today, actually, I am today in Kampala, Uganda, where I participated to a panel on InsurTech, okay? And what is extremely interesting here in Africa is that if you take, with the exception of South Africa, if you take even the average of the most populated countries, the penetration of insurance, not InsurTech, insurance, is between 1% and 5%. Actually, in Uganda, it doesn't reach 1%, it's 0.8% of the population, despite the fact that, of course, you know, half of the population has access to internet and all that. And we were debating, you know, what was the reason for that, right? And one thing that was extremely interesting, and I would like maybe, you know, Mark and Serena to give a last almost a personal common sense opinion of business person, you know, on this, is the fact that unlike developed countries where actually paying for a service for something that could happen, but you're not certain that is happening, it is, you know, sort of a protection instinct that it is very sort of common. In emerging markets, the fact that, you know, oh, this will never happen to me sort of syndrome makes the proliferation of insurance services more complex. I think that the player that will unlock insurance in emerging markets will have rather a billion potential for new customers. Mark, you know, I am pretty sure that given your exposure, you know, you have been giving a thought to this as well. What would you say?
Mateo, rather than directly answer the question, I just want to borrow, because I don't want to pretend that we all have the insight into that part of our future. But if you look back the last few years and you think, okay, in if some one of us was to make a bet about who was to be one of the number one financial services firms in Southeast Asia, probably none of us would have said Grab Taxi. So, you know, and so you've got Grab Taxi, and, you know, working in a cashless or a cash society, ended up creating their own wallet, and now have become really the number one wallet and financial services company in that era, or in that area. So I think for us, whenever we look at insurance, I look at what Zhong An have done with that, with Alibaba and Tencent, you know, as they begin to sort of scan or buy those parts of the market. I think we're going to be looking at other avenues that really own it that are beyond what we would see as traditional.
Thank you, Mark. Serena, do you want to give a last word? What's your opinion? And by the way, you know, I'm not saying that Italy is an emerging market, because as Matteo said at the beginning, is an extremely sort of poster child for telematics. Although you know so well that the mentality of Italians is rather, you know, keep the cash, you know, in cash, and be very skeptical when it becomes to buy insurance and wealth management products. And I know that the bridge between Italy and Africa might be too big, but what's your view on this?
Listen, I'll answer by going back a few years. I don't know if any of you know the famous quotes of Winston Churchill on insurance, when he said, if I had my way, I would write the word insure upon the door of every cottage. And this statement that seems kind of strange here was directed to the weakest part of the society, the families, the women, I believe that particularly in areas like Africa, but not only Africa, where there's not public welfare, insurance is something that in some part should be kind of paid or in a sense nudged by the state, because with very little money, it can protest really the people from disaster. So I pretty much agree on that. I'm not sure that Africa, I believe that Africa is the right example, but just think about what's going on in the United States. So I think insurance, in a sense, is a kind of social need.
Thank you, Serena. So I think it's about time to wrap up. I would like to thank both Paolo and Spiros, my co-host for the show today. Thank you, guys.
Good to be on Breaking Banks Europe.
And of course, we already listened to Matteo at the beginning of the show, but thank you, Serena and Mark, for that great contributions of yours. And I look forward to host you more times on the show, because you have so much more insights to share. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Matteo.
And it's a wrap. See you next time, guys. Stay tuned.
Thanks for listening to Breaking Banks Europe, a Provoke Media podcast in cooperation with FinTech Stage. Don't forget to tweet us out, shout out, or post to the team at Breaking Banks EU on Twitter. If there's something or someone you'd like to hear on our cast, let us know. See you next week on Breaking Banks Europe.